Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 5th of August 2020. A Wednesday, hump day already. Hope you're getting humped and all that good stuff on a hump day. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com. The Patreon website for the special curse show on Saturday, and there's going to be a lot of cursing, is Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. I'm not drunk. I swear to God. And yeah, all good things. I'm on the social media platforms, although I don't do much on anything but Twitter. I've got a lot to go through, tons of things to get to. The Axios interview heard round the world. Oh my God, did you see what Donald Trump said about debts? It is what it is. Isn't it what it is? Is it something else? If it's not what it is, what is it? Sounds like you're having a conversation with Bill Clinton there, trying to figure out what the definition of the word is. But the fake pearl clutching by the never-Trumpers and the liberal Democrats, which the line between the two is blurring even more than usual, is, of course, ridiculous. Numbers matter. You can pick any numbers you want. You can choose any numbers you want and try to, I don't know, create whatever picture you think is going to be helpful to you at any given moment. And that's what was happening there with Jonathan Swan of Axios. I'll get into the audio. Plus, he wasted time asking him about John Lewis's legacy. Who gives a damn about John Lewis's legacy? Honest to God, are we done? Are we still, are we on day 65 of John Lewis memorials? Can we move past it? I'll explain why John Lewis will be forgotten very soon. And it has nothing to do with him being a Democrat. It has everything to do with him being an insignificant, unimportant member of the House of Representatives. And that's just what happens to insignificant, unimportant backbenchers in the House of Representatives. They're forgotten. So we'll get into that. We have a whole bunch of other things to get to, as we always do. But first, as today is Wednesday, we do what we do every Wednesday. We have our pre-recorded phone call with AncientLifeOil.com Grand Poobah, Ronnie McMullen. So we go to that now. Joining me on the phone right now is Ronnie McMullen. He is the guru, the mastermind behind AncientLifeOil.com, my preferred, awesome, excellent, 100% organic CBD oil. Ronnie, tell us about the miracle of CBD.
Well, in this time of need, we have CBD is a need because of all the anxiety and the stress going on in the world right now. Some people are having a hard time even sleeping, so this is something that's going to help you incredibly. It's great for inflammation, and there's so many things. It would take me 20 minutes to even top off what's really going on with CBD. But
I take it for my eye strain. I take it for my knee pain, and it does help me sleep on top of it. It's a trifecta for me.
Yeah, it's an awesome product, and we now have CBD that is THC free. It is called Broad Spectrum. It is, and to know that, it's a white bottle, white box. That way, and if somebody wants the THC, you can go to the black bottle and get the 0.003.
What's the difference there? Because the THC does not get you high. There isn't enough in it to
right.
get you high.
But some people just want that little driplet. Yeah, that little nothing. So I just thought, I'm going to give them both ways. That, you know, it's all about choice.
There you go. The ultimate choice is to go to AncientLifeOil.com. At checkout, enter promo code Derek, and you get free fast shipping. There are all sorts of products up there at Ancient Life Oil.
all will make you feel better. Ronnie McMullen, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And thanks to Ronnie again. Yes, ancientlifeoil.com, promo code Derek, click apply, free shipping, all the good stuff. I literally have four bottles of it sitting in front of me, staring at me, mocking it. I take it every morning in lieu of breakfast. Not in lieu of breakfast. I just don't have time for breakfast. It's amazing. Someday I'll tell you what my day is like. I don't know if it's lazy. I mean, my commute is just down a flight of stairs, but it's going from 7 o'clock in the morning till midnight. Did you see that video of that massive explosion in Beirut, Lebanon? My God, it was gigantic. I was doing my radio show and the video comes up in my Twitter feed. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, shit, how do I describe this without saying shit? What do I do? And I had no idea, like, was it an airstrike? Was it a terrorist attack? What the hell was it? It turns out that according to the Lebanese authorities, it's kind of funny and sad that the media immediately went to Israel and said, hey, did you guys have anything to do with this? And they said, we had nothing to do with that. Turns out that a bunch of explosives were seized from a ship in the port of Beirut, which is where the explosion took place, and then they were stored there. And guess what happens when a fire gets out? Now, it was a raging fire. It kind of looked like fireworks, and I thought I'd heard somebody say something about fireworks had caught fire, but because there was a lot of little explosions that sparkled. You know, it just seemed like fireworks until the big explosion that got to wherever they were storing explosives. So there's your periodic reminder, in case you did not get it last time, to store your explosives properly and far away from everything else. And better yet, just get rid of your explosives, okay? Take them out to the middle of nowhere and explode them. Or if you have a home or garage full of explosives, maybe call the authorities and turn them in. Don't play around with explosives and don't leave them near other flammable materials. Storing your explosives in the oily rag shack, probably not a good idea. Hundreds of people are reported to have been killed or injured. It's a horrible situation. It's a weirdly hypnotic thing, watching video of a gigantic explosion. You see that concussion wave that comes. People were out. Obviously, the port had been on fire for a while, and you see the smoke billowing, and we live in 2020, and it's 2020 everywhere around the world. People grab their phones and film it, going, oh, wow, look at this fire. I'm on my balcony a couple of miles away, or I'm on a jet ski or whatever it is. Let's film this. Let's capture this moment, because it is one of those things that you're like, am I really seeing this? And so there are a bunch of different shots of this massive explosion, because it burned for quite a while before the explosion happened. And it is terrifying. I don't mean to make light of it, but it is one of those things that's absolutely hypnotic. I used to love the show Mythbusters, and I was sad to see that Grant Imahara died. But you watch, they did one episode of Mythbusters. Well, they did a lot of episodes of Mythbusters where they would explode things, blow them up. One in particular, I can't remember exactly what it was. I think they were trying to test the theory that somebody had fallen out of a plane, and the concussion of the explosion, the bomb that the plane had dropped, somehow cushioned his blow or slowed him. It was weird. It didn't work. But you see these, or every once in a while you see these footage things of natural gas explosions or something, and you see that wave of the concussion rushing across the ground, the dust being kicked up, and then the camera shaking. You realize that, you know, you're miles away, but you still get hit with that. It's a smaller, less violent version of the 1950s videos of nuclear explosions blowing up fake towns, you know, where you watch the house be destroyed and blown away and obliterated. But it's not that those other ones aren't real, but it's more real because it's not planned and there are human beings in there. It's a terrifying thing. So make sure that you store your explosives properly and safely. Speaking of explosives, let's get into this Axios thing. Because this was all the rage yesterday. And oh my God, it just shows that Donald Trump is a freaking moron. He knows nothing about anything. He's arguing with Jonathan Swan about numbers and numbers and this, and you got to count them this way and you got to count them the other way. Missing in all of this is that Jonathan Swan is choosing the sets of numbers that make things look the worst rather than favorable in any way, shape, or form to the president. A fair way to assess coronavirus deaths, there are many ways. Total number of deaths, sure. Although the way we count deaths, I had, you know, maybe I'll play that. I had John Lott on the show last week, and then I had John Lott on my radio show on Friday, and he pointed out some very interesting things about the way that coronavirus deaths are tallied. And one particular fact that stuck out to me was that they test dead bodies in New York State, right? Because you can apparently still get coronavirus from a dead body for a period of time afterwards. So for morticians' sake, things like that, funeral home directors, they test the bodies to confirm that they're either contagious or not contagious. And they found that, I believe his number was 37% of the dead people in New York State that were, their listed cause of death with COVID was COVID-19, tested negative for the virus, which is a startling fact considering that New York State had more deaths than any place else in the country and more place deaths than a lot of places and a lot of countries in the world. Actually, let's play that now. And you've been looking at death totals, you've been looking at New York, you've been looking at what constitutes a coronavirus death and how it's counted. And there's some of this is known, a lot of this is unknown, but there is it's a wide net that they're casting. And maybe the 150,000 death number might not be anywhere near accurate.
Yeah. I mean, I've dealt a lot with numbers over time, but the quality of the data that they have here for the coronavirus is really horribly done. I've been working with Tim Craig Allen, who's a governor for the American College of Pathology, on this stuff. And I'll just give you a couple of examples. When they test whether people have the coronavirus, the way they count it is not by individual. They count it by test done. So let's say somebody's in the hospital with the coronavirus for 14 days. They may test the individual every day for whether they have the coronavirus because they want to know should the person remain in isolation or not. Putting people in isolation is costly. And they like to know, can I move the person out or not? So they test them every day. If they test them for 14 days, that counts as 14 different cases. And one of the problems is that 2.5 months ago, when testing was constrained, they wouldn't have tested the person every day. They would have tested the person when they thought there was a good reason to test them. And so you're going to get a big increase in the number of cases over time just because you're able to go and test more.
But you're testing the same people more. So exactly. One person could be 12 positives.
Exactly. You know, even Louis Gohmert, who just got the virus, he has a video out talking about he's been tested multiple times already, you know, in part just to make sure that he really has the virus. And that's not uncommon. Many places in the country will test people even outside of the hospital multiple times. You know, people can go, just a simple reference for this, you can go to a place called COVIDtracking.com and look at their data by state. And they will list there how most states count it by looking at the number of tests as each separate case rather than the number of individuals who have it. But the data on deaths from the coronavirus is at least as bad as it is for the testing. So, for example, if you read the CDC rules, and I have quotes from many state public health directors, they count it as a coronavirus death if you have the virus, whether the virus caused the death or not. And that's very different from other countries. You have cases where somebody was in hospice, and then they got the virus, and they die, and they blame that on the coronavirus, or people who have died in motorcycle accidents, or other types of accidents, or people who are asymptomatic, who had heart attacks or strokes. It just doesn't make any sense. But even worse than that, they're counting coronavirus deaths for people who tested negative for the virus. In New York, for example, 37% of the listed coronavirus deaths, the body tested negative for the virus. And there's some other similar states like New Jersey and Connecticut that have similar numbers. They've been testing for a few months in those hot spots all the people who died in order to check whether they have the coronavirus, in part because people can catch the virus even from dead bodies. And so, you have morticians and others that are handling the body, and they just want to know whether or not there's some risk that might be associated with the body there. The thing is,
so those probably also count as positive tests too, right?
Right. Those would count. That's right. Those would count. The ones that did test positive, but the negative ones, the false negative rate from these tests is only for the five most commonly used tests, only 4%, and that can't explain 37%. But what they'll do is, if somebody had the sniffles or any other symptom that might, a fever or anything that might be related to the coronavirus, they will then use that to classify it as a coronavirus death, even though the person could have had the common flu.
Right, or they could have just had an allergy or something.
So there, that was me with John Lott on the radio on Friday, and I found that really fascinating. When I recorded with him for the podcast the day before, we talked a little bit afterwards, and that's when he mentioned that, and I said, shit, I wish I had brought this up during the podcast. So how about you come on the radio tomorrow, and we can talk about your book, and we can talk about your data here. And he said, sure. So I knew I could repurpose that, so I thought I'd repurpose that. It's very important to give that the full context before we listen to the president talk to Jonathan Swan from Axios and the thing that got all the pearl clutchers clutching their pearls. It is amazing. The data is so bad that we are going to literally learning nothing from this pandemic is a better option than what the path we're on, where we're going to learn the wrong lessons because we're collecting such shoddy data. And it is partially due to the fact that the people collecting the data are just lazy, then they don't care. The CDC put out really broad guidelines that said if you think they had it, go ahead, count it, no big deal. And also, I think, in large part due to the fact that hospitals are incentivized to have more coronavirus patients because they're paid more for treating coronavirus patients. So if somebody dies and they go, they were 95 years old and they were riddled with cancer and they were already in a coma and whatever, but you know what? I thought I saw them sniffle, so let's just go ahead and count it as a coronavirus. We'll get the extra money, and you begin to see that this is a volume business that hospitals can make out like a bandit. They have a financial incentive to make up deaths, to just ascribe deaths to coronavirus. And it pollutes the data and makes it worthless. So as Jonathan Swan is bringing out the number of dead per capita, the raw numbers, the total numbers versus other countries, you got to realize that our country counts. You're not dealing with apples to apples. You're not even dealing with apples to another fruit in some countries, to be honest with you. Because if our guidelines are so screwed up that we're ensnaring this many people who knows what they're counting in Korea. In Korea, it could be, unless you determine it to absolutely be the cause of death, then it's not the cause of death. In this country, we got a guy dying in a motorcycle accident who had COVID-19, and they said, well, that count it, mark it down, which is, you know, awful. It's the way I play golf, but it's awful. It's close enough. Don't worry about it. But if you plan to learn anything from this data, going backwards, going forwards, maybe the next pandemic, or even to help with this pandemic, you're not going to be able to know anything from the absolute shitstorm of data, faulty data that we've collected. I don't know who's doing it right in the world, but I know that we're doing it wrong. And if they're off by 37% in the number of dead people in New York alone, imagine if it's just 25% or 20%. That's a significant chunk of people. Then you add in the fact, and those are the false positives, or the people who the bodies were tested who didn't actually have the virus. You add in if somebody dies at all, and you think they had it, go ahead and count it. Is there an average 7,000 people who die per year or per day in this country? I'd like to see that total relative to, you know, I'd like to see 2020 to 2019 to 2018 on back for a few years to find out if there is, in fact, an uptick. Because you'll hear Jonathan Swan in this clip where he's arguing with the president, talking about 1,000 people are dying every day, 1,000 people are dying every day. Well, okay, then that would mean that 8,000 people, actually probably 8,500 people were dying every day relative to the 7,400 people who die on an average day. That may be the case. I don't know. But I do know that nobody seems to be bothered by this, and nobody seems to be looking into any of this because, well, the White House has an incentive to. I don't know, maybe this thought hasn't occurred to the Trump administration, but the media sure as hell doesn't have any reason to. They don't have any desire to. They want to hurt the president. It's a mess. So when you hear this argument over data, recognize that they're arguing over garbage data. And the point the president was making is perfectly valid. The president is going to be arguing that you should count the deaths as a percentage of the cases, right? Not the percentage of the overall population. Because the percentage of cases, even though, as John Lott just explained, that number is garbage too, because somebody could be tested 10 days in a row, and that would count as 10 new positives, even though it's one person. Again, do you have any idea how screwed up this is? But what is the recovery rate? How effective are we at treating people who have coronavirus? That's kind of important. So keep all of that in mind as you listen to this reporter argue with the president of the United States about how horrible the United... Does anybody really believe the United States is just doing horribly? Does anybody honestly believe that the best healthcare system in the country, where everything is taken care... Nobody's going to go bankrupt because you've seen these stories. My husband is in the hospital, was in the hospital for a month, and our medical bills are going to be astronomical. Does anybody really believe that's going to happen? Anybody really believe that the government isn't going to step in and take care of that at this point? I mean, come on. That's beside the point. Listen to them argue numbers. They're arguing different things. Swan is arguing garbage data that tries to make the president out to be the worst. And again, you're trusting data from other countries when you know how our data is captured, collected, calculated. You got to assume that the rest of the planet is just as crappy at it as well.
Take a look at some of these charts.
I'd love to.
We're going to look.
Let's look.
And if you look at death,
yeah, started to go up again.
One. Well, right here, the United States is lowest in numerous categories. We're lower than the world.
Lower than the world.
Lower than Europe.
In what? In what?
Take a look. Right here. Here's case death.
Oh, you're doing death as a proportion of cases. I'm talking about death as a proportion of population. That's where the U.S. is really bad.
Well,
much worse than South Korea, Germany, etc.
You can't do that. You have to go by where. Look, here is the United States. You have to go by the cases. The cases.
Why not
death.
As a proportion of population?
When we have somebody, what it says is when you have somebody that has where there's a case.
Oh, okay.
The people that live from those cases.
It's surely a relevant statistic to say if the U.S. has X population and X percentage of death of that population versus South Korea.
No, because you have to go by the cases.
Well, look at South Korea, for example. 51 million population, 300 deaths. It's crazy compared to...
You don't know that.
I do. It's
you
on the,
don't know
it's,
that. Don't,
you think they're faking their statistics? South Korea?
An I won't get into country? That because I have a very good relationship with the country. But you don't know that. And they have spikes. Look, here's
Germany,
one.
Germany, low, 9,000?
Here's one right here, United States. You take the number of cases. Okay. Now look, we're last, meaning we're first.
Last? I don't know what we're first best. In. As a what?
Take a look. Okay. Again, it's cases.
Okay.
And we have cases... Because of the testing.
Wait, 1,000 Americans are dying a day, but I understand. I understand on cases, it's different.
No, but you're not reporting it correctly, Jonathan.
I think I am, but...
If you take a look at this other chart, look, this is our testing, I believe. This is the testing, yeah.
Yeah, we do more tests.
No, wait a minute. Well, don't we get credit for that? And because we do more tests, we have more cases. In other words, we test more, we have... But, now, take a look. The top one, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. The top, Jonathan.
If hospital rates were going down and deaths were going down, I'd say terrific. You deserve to be praised for testing, but they're all going up.
You know, they very rarely talk.
60,000 Americans are in hospital.
If you watch the news or read the papers, they usually talk about new cases, new cases, new cases.
I'm talking about death.
Well, you look at death.
It's going up.
Death is way down from where it was.
It's 1,000 a day. It was 2,500. It went down to 500. Now it's going up again.
Excuse me, where it was is much higher than where it is right now.
It went down and it went up again.
But now it's going down again. It's going down in Arizona. It's going down in Florida.
Nationally,
it's going down in Texas. Take a look at this. These are the tests.
It's going down in Florida?
Yeah, it leveled out and it's going down. That's my report as of yesterday.
Why is a reporter arguing with the President of the United States? Why does a reporter not recognize that data is garbage? Why aren't reporters asking the president about the data being garbage? You heard in there the president talking, and it was repeated everywhere, the president talking about it, and he says, it is what it is. And that sent everybody over the edge. Oh, my God, he said it is what it is. When talking about deaths, the media went absolutely apeshit. Oh, he said it is what it is. He doesn't care. He's talking about death, and he's saying it is what it is. Is it something else? Is it what it isn't? What is it, then, if it isn't what it is? Can we get a ruling on what it is? But the media latched onto that and said, oh, my God, the president doesn't care. No, the president cares. Kind of every human being cares. But to sit there and pretend that, what is the president supposed to do? Build a time machine and go back and save people? It is what it is. But to... talk about going forward, to go forward and figure out how to protect people who are alive now, you have to have accurate data and you have to get on the same page. Jonathan Swan wants to pick out the numbers that make the United States look to be the worst. The president wants to pick out numbers that make the United States look to be the best. Makes perfect sense that the president would want to do that, because you also don't want to scare the living shit out of the public so that they never leave their houses again. They laminate their bodies and they go, oh my God, we're never going anywhere. We need to wear scuba gear. I'm not talking about a wetsuit. I'm talking about one of those old timey things with the giant helmets and the hose. How about we not do that? The number of people in this country versus the number of cases in this country, is it a risk? Absolutely. But is it everywhere? No. And if you don't pay attention, if you just watch the media, particularly the left-wing media, and I've been impacted by this as well. So it's not me passing judgment. It's me pointing out that I'm just as guilty of this as anybody. You walk out of the house, and depending on what you just read or you just saw, you go, oh my God, the whole world is like a porn set. Okay? It's like a porn set, and there is just some guy just blew his load all over every single thing. Don't touch anything. If you bring it into your house, wipe it down. If you touch something, boil your hands, scrub them down, rub, and pretend like you're getting ready for surgery. But instead of using soap, use Purell and pure alcohol. Make sure you get some Everclear and just dip your hands in that. And forget it. Turn the new Palmolive. Your hands soaking in it. What is it? Is this just gasoline and bleach and alcohol? Go ahead. So it is a disaster, and it is impossible to learn anything from this because nobody's working from the same page. There's so much garbage data out there. We have no standard for data. The president needs to insist that there be standards for data and that the numbers be adjusted accordingly. If what John Lott said is true, that 37% of the bodies of people who allegedly died of COVID-19 in New York State are testing negative for the virus, then we've got to go, well, then what did they die of? Be interesting to know, important to know. And also we have to adjust their numbers accordingly because there are tens of thousands of dead people in New York. And if you can take 37% of them off of that, that drops down the total. New York, the number two state for deaths, or New Jersey, the number two state for deaths, you can do the same thing. If you can do that there, as John Lott said that data was garbage, then we should do that. If we're looking, and John told me this off air, that somewhere between 40 and 60% of the deaths attributed to COVID-19 might not have had anything to do with it, or it may have been a minor contributing factor. But again, when a 92-year-old dies of COVID-19 while they're already in hospice care for whatever else is wrong with them, does that really count? Is it really fair to count that? I don't know. I'm not a medical professional. It seems like that should be a discussion amongst medical professionals. I don't care what conclusion they draw. I think there should be a conclusion drawn and that conclusion be the standard so that a guy who dies in a motorcycle accident with coronavirus is not counted as a coronavirus death, that sort of thing. So it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. But Swan is trying to say, well, we're horrible. We're the worst. And the president's saying, no, we're not. We're not. Does anybody really believe that we're the worst? I mean, Democrats are selling that, of course. But does anybody really believe that we're the worst? This we're the worst mentality is created because the left is trying to give the impression and impose the belief that there was something else that could have been done, that should have been done. You hear this from Joe Biden all the time. Well, the president dithered, the president did this. We need to, if I had been president, I would put down a national plan to stop COVID-19. How? What is it? If you have this plan, this master plan, this wonderful plan that will save tens of thousands of lives, Joe Biden, why are you keeping it to yourself? What's going on there? Are you some sort of sick, evil bastard who just says to hell with you? If you don't elect me president, people can keep dying? Or are you full of crap and recognize that you're not going to really be called out on this because the people who would do it would be the liberal journalists who are never going to do it. And so you can lie with impunity. And having worthless data that's inflated, that you literally can't learn anything from in its current state, being constantly regurgitated on cable news is not helpful at all. I would think that, you know, our Lord and Savior, President Anthony Fauci, would be interested in such a thing. You know, I'm a scientist. I'm driven by the data. Wah, 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 wah. All right, well, is the data shit or not? And if the data's shit, why haven't you done or said anything about it yet? You have the ear of the president. You have the ear of everybody in media. Why don't you step up to the plate and announce, look, this data's garbage. We got to take everything we've got here with a grain of salt, and we're going to have to weed through it pretty quickly to find out the truth. And then set about weeding through it pretty quickly. You got a desk job. You got the time. You got staff. God knows there's more money available than ever before. So even if you don't have the staff and you don't have the time, you can hire somebody with the knowledge to go through and do it. Hey, hire John Lott. How about that? They won't do that. The scientists, the doctors, they're getting money hand over fist. The hospitals, money hand over fist because of this. They're not going to say, oh, shit, 60% of the COVID deaths we reported weren't actually COVID deaths. Sorry about that, because that would mean they'd have to pay back the money they got for treating coronavirus, those patients, because they would not have been coronavirus patients. You see what I'm saying? This is what I mean when I talk about there's a possibility that not only will we not learn anything from this mess, from this tragedy, but we might actually come out with the wrong lessons. The worst possible outcome is that we come away with this not having learned anything except for false information, that, God forbid, when it happens again, we can't use anything we've learned. That's what I'm afraid of. The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you, ladies and gentlemen. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. How cool would that be to have a hat signed by the president? He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters, so be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you do not want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters. You guys, you're one of them. All you have to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for 4 more years. God, we need that so badly. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Okay, now that was part of that Jonathan Swan interview, was part of what made news. Another part that the Twitter sphere, that the intelligentsia was buzzing about, was Jonathan Swan, for reasons that are known only to Jonathan Swan, asked President Trump about John Lewis and John Lewis's legacy. Now, I've touched on John Lewis on the Saturday Curse Show. I touched on John Lewis about how it was ridiculous that the man had 6 memorials across 3 states. All that, it was just a week's worth of self-indulgence. But to be asking the President of the United States about this is irrelevant. Nobody really cares. Outside of the political world, outside of the... they can exploit his memory for fundraising world, which is rather large. Nobody gives a shit about John Lewis passing away beyond the normal human reaction of it's sad that somebody died. But again, 7,500 people die every day. Why you're bothering, wasting time asking the president about it is beyond me. But he did. And the president is catching hell for his answer. Now, sometimes the president of the United States is not the most articulate spokesman for himself. So, sometimes he is. But the president, and Swan also interrupts the president a lot. And they'll say, well, I was interrupting him because my time was limited. Well, then why are you wasting it asking a bullshit question about John Lewis, would be my response. But he asks about John Lewis's legacy. Trump doesn't know what his legacy is going to be. Who cares what John Lewis's legacy is? John Lewis will be forgotten in a couple of years. And I'll explain that after you listen to the clip. It's true. But listen to this and listen to President try to start saying, look, I don't know John Lewis. Nothing, no offense against him. He didn't come to my inauguration. He didn't come to the State of the Union address. He's not exactly this bastion of bipartisanship and wonderful human being that worked across the aisle that he's being portrayed as by the media. By the way, he skipped George W. Bush's inauguration too. So he's been kind of a very partisan hacky asshole for a very, very long time. With that in mind, I'll tell you what I think his legacy will be after we listen to the president be badgered about it.
John Lewis is lying in state in the U.S. Capitol. How do you think history will remember John Lewis?
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. I don't know John Lewis. He chose not to come to my inauguration. He chose. I never met John Lewis, actually, I don't believe.
Do you find him impressive?
I can't say one way or the other. I find a lot of people impressive. I find many people not impressive. But no, but I didn't go.
Do you find his story impressive?
He didn't come to my inauguration. He didn't come to my State of the Union speeches. And that's okay. That's his right. And again, nobody has done more Americans than I have.
I understand.
He should have come. But I think he made a big mistake.
But taking your relationship with him out of it, do you find his story impressive, what he's done for this country?
He was a person that devoted a lot of energy and a lot of heart to civil rights, but there were many others also.
There's a petition to rename the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, as the John Lewis Bridge. Would you support that idea?
I would have no objection to it if they'd like to do it.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Would have no objection to it whatsoever. Okay.
What a complete and total waste of time. You can tell Jonathan Swan is like, oh, I love John Lewis. I'm going to go and touch myself to John Lewis after this. Why don't you praise John Lewis too? Well, because John Lewis was an asshole. Okay? Can we just say it? John Lewis was an asshole. John Lewis did amazing and important work when he was younger. But John Lewis is more than that. You don't get to pick somebody's best day and say, well, that's all they were. There you go. They're a superhero. No. John Lewis can be a hero and a goat simultaneously, just like everybody else. They're tearing down the founding fathers for their beliefs, in some cases for their owning slaves, in other cases for them merely existing in a time of slavery and using the language of the time of slavery to describe slavery when they did not themselves engage in slavery. So to sit there and say, well, they're awful because they once said in a letter this one thing, and that means that they're a monster. John, I'm sure they have problems with John Adams. Abraham Lincoln, do you know that Abraham Lincoln needed to tear down his statue because he was, somebody floated the idea of returning slaves to Africa and he didn't immediately shoot it down? Well, because he had other things on his mind. Who gives a shit? It didn't happen, all right? But to sit there and say, well, John Lewis, he was a civil rights hero. Okay, yes, he was. But he was a lot more than that. John Lewis was a guy who smeared the Tea Party relentlessly, calling them racists. He was a man who smeared the President of the United States, calling him a racist. He was the guy who claimed that the Tea Party had, well, they said the N-word to me as I was walking over to the Capitol to vote on Obamacare. No proof whatsoever. The whole trip was videotaped, yet no video ever emerged. I've talked about this before. Andrew Breitbart offered a $10,000 reward to anybody who could prove that had happened. That reward, to this day, it still stands. That reward remains unclaimed. So to sit there and say that John Lewis was just the guy he was during the civil rights era when those evil racist bastards beat the shit out of him and nearly killed him is a lie, is a fraud. And I choose to look at the whole person. The whole person should be their legacy. Nobody is perfect. Nobody is even close to perfect. But the media is portraying, and you can hear it there in Jonathan Swan's question, John Lewis is about as close to perfection as you get. What do you think his legacy will be? Well, should we get rid of Teddy Roosevelt on Mount Rushmore and put John Lewis up there, or should we just wait to do it when we add Barack Obama? What do we do? How do we praise this saintly man who walked among us? No, he was a partisan hack Democrat for the vast majority of his adult life. He joined the party of the people who beat the shit out of him and nearly killed him. He supported the party that did that to him. That is not particularly praiseworthy, in my opinion. His work in civil rights, absolutely. His protesting, his courage, absolutely. His anger at Republicans and his willingness to call anybody who disagrees with him a racist is reprehensible. Okay? It doesn't negate the civil rights work that he did in the 50s and 60s, but it's up there. It's important to acknowledge that as well. That's where I fall on it. And what will John Lewis's legacy be? Let me explain what I mean when I say that John Lewis will be forgotten soon. 20 years, I said 20 years on the radio, it'll probably be more like 10 years, maybe even 5 years. They'll rename the Edmund Pettus Bridge after him. Why are you asking the president about that? Down there, they're thinking about renaming a bridge. What do you think of that? I don't give a shit about what they call a bridge. They want to rename it for him? Fine. It's perfectly fine. Who cares? You don't need my permission. You don't need my blessing. But, yeah, fine, if that's what they want. But his legacy will be not much. There'll be books written. I guarantee you that there are at least 3 contracts being negotiated right now to write definitive biographies of John Lewis, to lionize him, because if you're a Democrat, they will line up to lionize you. It still won't work. He'll be forgotten because he was a backbench, insignificant member of Congress. It's impolite to say that, but it's also accurate to say that. What is the major, massive legislative accomplishment of John Lewis? I'll give you a second to go ahead and look it up. What is it? You don't know. He didn't really accomplish much. His district was kind of gone to hell over his tenure in Congress. So what will his legacy be? It will be that of 99% of the other members of Congress, both Democrat and Republican. He will be remembered by people who knew him, forgotten by other people, and in 5-10 years when somebody mentions John Lewis, they'll go, John Lewis in the news? Who are you talking about? Who's John Lewis? That's it. He didn't accomplish much as a legislator. His civil rights work will be remembered, but there are a great many people who did more in the civil rights arena than John Lewis. He should be mentioned among the heroes of the civil rights movement, but he is not the hero of the civil rights movement. And frankly, we forget about 90% of the heroes of the civil rights movement. Name another civil rights, name 5 civil rights heroes. And you probably are straining after 2 or 3. Add to that, again, back to the members of Congress. Name your member of Congress in the district you had growing up, unless it's the same person. You probably can't. They're interchangeable. They are insignificant. They are disposable, for lack of a better word. So here's an easier one to come up with. Think back in order and say, who are the speakers of the House? Right? Who are the speakers of the House? You can probably go Nancy Pelosi. You can then go, well, it was Paul Ryan before that. Then it was Nancy Pelosi, and it was John Boehner in there somewhere. And then there was Newt Gingrich, right? And then you get lost for words. You forget all about Denny Hastert, as the country would like to forget all about Denny Hastert. You go back beyond that, who are they? Who was the big Speaker of the House during the civil rights battle? Who pushed the civil rights bill through the House of Representatives? No idea. There are buildings in Washington, D.C., the Dirksen Senate Office Building, the Hart Senate Office Building, the Russell Senate Office Building. If you want to know who those people were, you'd have to look them up. And then there's a whole bunch of house buildings that are named after people. You have no idea. They named buildings after these people. And unless you have a vested interest or work in the House of Representatives or have some sort of weird fetish where you care about this crap, you have no idea who these people were, nor no concern. Because who cares? They're members of the House of Representatives. Senators are barely remembered. And frankly, I like it that way. These people should be up there doing a job. They should only be up there for a certain amount of time, and they shouldn't be doing it to try and make themselves immortal. They should be up there to do a damn job and then go home, go back to real life. That person I'd build a memorial to. that person I'd build a statue to. But to sit there and think, well, John Lewis, he should be remembered forever. Should we rename Washington, D.C. to John Lewis, D.C.? Should we do that? John Lewis never owned slaves. George Washington owned slaves. We should get rid of Washington, D.C., and we should name it John Lewis, D.C. Somebody will suggest something stupid like that. Just keep all this shit in mind. It's nothing against John Lewis. It's just that it's human nature. We go forward. If you just spend all of your time looking backward, you're going to trip over something. You're going to hit your head. You're going to be really stupid and waste a good chunk of your life. John Lewis has passed away. He did good. He did bad. He did indifferent. He's a human being. You want to lionize him, you want to rename a bridge, you want to try to push to rename a house office building, fine, go ahead. His ultimate legacy, as it were, in the minds of the American public will be, who is that guy again? In about a decade. Thank God, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, because if all we did as a species was dwell on dead people, we'd be in a world of hurt. We'd be in a world of trouble. We just would be. Oh, by the way, and it's weird because we're, you know, the only species that we know of that is conscious of our own mortality. And if all we did was think about the people we've lost, then we'd be all crippled. We need a distraction. It's a miracle that we don't sit around and think, someday I'm going to be dead. Someday I'm not going to be here. That'd be paralyzing to people. But I forget what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. The people who, just as a bit of a side to tie in coronavirus with John Lewis talk, the mayor of Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser, decreed, much like Andrew Cuomo up in New York, that if you go to a state where I don't like the numbers of COVID cases coming out of it, you have to self-quarantine for 14 days when you return. It's so important that you have to quarantine for 14 days. One of those states is Georgia. A whole bunch of Democrats conga-lined down to the final John Lewis Memorial down in Atlanta. Why? I'll tell you why. They did it because they wanted to send out fundraising emails with the line something along the lines of, well, I just returned from remembering perhaps the greatest living American ever, John Lewis. And I remember John told me once, make sure you win re-election. So along those lines, I'd like you to donate to my campaign. They wanted fundraising emails so they could say, I just returned from paying my respects to John Lewis. And that's why. Now, by decree in Washington, D.C., each of them should have had to have isolated for 14 days because of the threat of coronavirus. The mayor of D.C. granted an exemption to those members of Congress that went down there. A normal citizen, you go to Georgia to visit your parents, your grandparents, your children, whatever reason you go to Georgia, you come back, you have to isolate for 14 days because your existence could be an existential threat to the citizens of the nation's capital. But if you're a Democrat who went down there for a memorial service where there were a lot of people crowded into a church, not a lot of social distancing going on, you're cool. You get to stay. It is so nuts and so hypocritical and so stupid and so fraudulent. You can see why people are disgusted by our government. If it were a Republican funeral, you know, if it were some congressman, some random Republican, and they all wanted to go pay their respects, there would be no such waiver granted. You know there would be no such waiver granted. It'd be different people. It'd be politics. It's sick. I'm not saying that Republicans would be any better, because I'm not really sure. But we have to deal with the reality as it is. And as it is, this crap is going on in Washington, D.C., while You know, if you went down to Georgia from Washington, D.C. to visit family, you probably, I guarantee you, you saw less people and interacted with fewer people than any Democrat who went to John Lewis's funeral. I guarantee it. Because there were a lot of people crowded into that church. You probably saw five relatives. And you just made a special trip to go see those five relatives. You took precautions. Democrats took a government plane. Such a scam. Speaking of scams, it's not often that I come to the defense of Democrats, but I gotta call it like I see it. And this is Democrat on Democrat violence, so it's not like I'm really coming to the defense of Democrats. Politico has a story. It's kind of everywhere. The Attorney General of California is a former member of Congress named Javier Becerra. Just a radical left-winger. He's one of these Democrats who run for law enforcement who promise not to enforce the laws. He's a big open borders amnesty guy. I believe he was a member of the Hispanic caucus in Congress. He's now the Attorney General. Politico reports that he's filed charges against the husband of Los Angeles County District Attorney Jackie Lacey in connection with an incident in March in which he pulled a gun. I love that they say allegedly, but there's video of it. Pulled a gun on Black Lives Matter protesters at the couple's home. Now, what's messed up about this is these left-wing mutants, this mob, went to their home and were pounding on the door. They demanded attention. They wanted to meet. They're just being assholes. They're, of course, filming everything because that's what the left wing does is, you know, what's the point of doing something if you don't film it? And so the guy comes to the door with a gun and says, "Get the hell off my property." Makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Get the hell off my, who the hell are you? Get off my property. Get off my porch. He's got a gun. He's inside his own home. He never actually left his home. This isn't like that couple in St. Louis who were standing on their front lawn. This guy's still inside his home. If he wants to carry a gun with him or point a gun at people who are, you know, coming over with less than honorable intentions, you can do that, I would think, even in the state of California. But apparently not. If you're going to be a career criminal, you might want to consider moving out there, if only for the climate. Now, she is Los Angeles prosecutor, the Los Angeles County District Attorney, Jackie Lacey, is in a tight reelection bid. And that's where it gets interesting. And this is where I suspect the politics is at play here, because her opponent is somebody who used to be the San Francisco DA. Politico reports that the charges come as Jackie Lacey, the county's first black district attorney, faces a tough fight with George Gascon. I don't know how you pronounce it. It's Spanish. It's G-A-S-C-O with an accent over it on. A Latino who previously served as San Francisco DA. Now, why? How the hell does somebody move from San Francisco to Los Angeles to run for district attorney there? That seems a little weird. But Becerra is a big, he's a big race baiter. It's weird seeing Democrat on Democrat violence, and it's two Democrat-favored groups. They want to attract the black vote. They want to attract the Hispanic vote. But the Hispanic voters tend to vote for Hispanic candidates, and black voters tend to vote for black candidates, because Democrats have conditioned people to think that you can only be represented by somebody who looks like you. And this will be interesting, because it seems as though, since there's really no basis for any charges, they're misdemeanor charges, it seems like a ploy in my mind to bring these charges, that Becerra, who is Hispanic, would be doing this to help the Latino candidate. Because it says in the story, continues in Politico, she has faced scrutiny, meaning Lacey, has faced scrutiny from criminal justice activists who have cited her refusal to prosecute police officers who kill civilians and other tough-on-crime strategies. An opposition effort has gained further steam this summer amid racial justice protests. So the black Democrat district attorney is too soft or too hard on crime. So they're bringing in the big guns from San Francisco, apparently, and the attorney general, who is a big, big, big lefty, is sitting there stepping up to the plate trying to help out. I'll bring charges against the husband to try and embarrass her. I don't know. I'd be inclined to vote for somebody who defended their own home with a gun. He didn't fire it at anybody, but he did point it at him from his own home. People were on his property. He said, "Get the hell off my porch." They didn't get the hell off his porch. They didn't also seem all that concerned about having a gun pointed at them. But I love left-on-left violence. But on this one, I'm Team Lacey. This seems like political bullshit and posturing by Becerra simply to try and help defeat a black woman and help a Latino man win. Democrats wouldn't do that sort of race-based politics, would they? Yeah, they would. Look, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. So be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of reporters and of supporters. And you're one of them. All you have to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. This is paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. It'd be pretty cool to have one of those hats. Or if you're not a hat guy or gal or whatever, put it on eBay. Boom. Just wear it. Wear it to like Thanksgiving to annoy your liberal friends. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Wednesday hump day is already over. That means we're on the downslope, which means I've been meaning for the past 2 weeks to watch a movie on the weekend. Not just any movie. Like, it's my goal to watch a movie. I watch movies, but there's a movie I want to actually pay attention to rather than have on in the background. Mr. Jones, which looks really interesting, and it's about, seems to be about media propaganda, taking shots at the New York Times and Walter Duranty. And it's set, it's supposedly a true story set in the time of Stalin and the Ukrainian famine. So if anybody's seen that, if you think it's any good or if you think it's absolute crap, you shot me an email. I'd appreciate it because I've been meaning to. I just haven't had time. It's one of those movies I want to sit down and watch. And I'm wondering, it's like $12 to buy and $5 to rent. And I'm wondering if it's something I'd watch a couple of times. Is it worth buying or is it worth renting? Or is it worth skipping altogether and saving the 2 hours? Although those 2 hours will be spent doing something. It's not like I can bank them and at the end of my life go, wait a second, I forgot, I got 2 hours in my sock drawer. So with that in mind, I thank you guys for listening. The website is patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. I'm sure I'll swear about all of this on Saturday. It's Wednesday, Prince Spaghetti Day. Tomorrow's Thursday. We'll be back then. See you. Thanks.